Hello, my name's Kate Bowles and I'm interviewing you on behalf of the Wellcome Trust as you're taking part in Anthony Gormley's new artwork, One and Other. The date today is now the 28th of July 2009 and it's 2:21 a.m. If I can please ask you to state your full name, your date of birth and where you come from.
I'm David Conlon. My date of birth is the 9th of August 1982 and I'm from Lanesborough, County Longford, Ireland.
And how are you today?
Oh, I'm fine. I'm good. I'm surprisingly not that tired yet, but I might get there, yeah.
And have you come over from Ireland today?
I came over from Ireland yesterday.
So are you going to spend much time in London while you're here?
No, I'm just here for a couple of days. Well, I live in Cambridge, so most of the time. So actually, I was in Cambridge this morning and I just came down here for the evening. So, and then I'm staying with a friend tonight and back to Ireland tomorrow.
Great. What do you do in Cambridge?
I'm a fellow of one of the colleges, so okay. I'm a fellow in mathematics. So I've been there a while. I did PhD there after I did an undergrad in Dublin and then came over to do a PhD in Cambridge and I've stayed for this fellowship. So.
Fantastic. Okay. And you're here to take part in this project.
Yes.
3 o'clock in the morning, you'll be up. If I can take you back to when you first heard about the project and ask you what it was that motivated you to apply and sparked your interest.
I heard it from my girlfriend, actually, I just thought it was an interesting project. So I was aware of the plinth here because I remember seeing the very striking statue of the pregnant woman without limbs. So I generally knew what was going on the plinth. So I thought it would be very cool and very interesting to get involved with and try and do something.
Great. And then when you found out that you had got a place, how did you decide how to best use your hour?
Well, I ran it by a number of friends to try and figure out what exactly I should do with it. It's very hard to decide, I think. One thing I thought about was to juggle, because I juggle as well. It's kind of two things that get associated with mathematicians, I think, are juggling and Rubik's Cubes. And the juggling idea, there's always the problem if you drop something, especially when you're up there, it might go flying down for... So I thought instead that I'd get a bunch of Rubik's Cubes. I basically talked to friends just to see what kind of ideas they had. And after a while decided that this was the best thing to do.
So what are you going to do with them?
So I'm going to... I have a bag full of Rubik's Cubes out there. So I'm going to... not actually solve them. I'm going to make a mural using them. So I'm going to make just a kind of a pattern using the Rubik's Cubes, which involves solving or doing something with quite, not solving completely, but doing something with a lot of them, making them into a certain kind of pattern, and then stacking them up in a nice square so you get a nice shape out of it. Probably actually I'll have to stack them on the ground rather than up, because if they're up they'll get blown over by the wind. So that's probably what I'm going to do.
And is there a pattern in mind that you have, or are you going to...
Improvising will be too difficult. I think if I was to improvise and try and do a picture of something, which is, I think, possible. I think if you were to do a picture, you'd have to... it would take a few hours. I think you'd have to think about it beforehand. You'd have to take a picture, divide it up, decide what colours would be best for different things. And partly the idea actually came from, I found online one day, I found a reference to an artist who was making pictures out of Rubik's Cubes and charging £20,000 for these things, like doing portraits of people with them. And I know myself that once you know how to do a Rubik's Cube, it's not actually that hard at all. So this guy is obviously cashing in on this thing. And I can essentially do, I'm sure I can do something or most of something within an hour. But what I'm actually going to do is a very regular pattern. So because in doing a regular pattern, you're able to just to do the same thing or almost the same thing again and again. And by so doing, you get into a rhythm and you should be able to get there faster. So the end product is a fractal, which is a kind of a iterative mathematical shape. So at each point you look, it looks similar to the whole thing. So you imagine if you start with a big square and you take out a bit in the center, and then you look at all the squares around that, and you take out the center of each of those, and then there's lots of little squares, then you take out the center of each, and you keep going. You get this very cool looking shape, and what I'm doing is an approximation to that.
Fantastic, wow. Brilliant. And how many Rubik's Cubes did you say you have?
I bought 100 for about £40 wholesale off eBay. And they're not proper Rubik's brand Rubik's Cubes. They're really, really bad ones, actually. They're very hard to turn. The difference is very, very noticeable. But I think if you were to buy 100 actual Rubik's Cubes, I think at the best it would cost you £500 or £600 probably. But the ones I have, they're sufficient for the purpose. And probably even afterwards, I'll use them to do murals and to do actual photos. I've only brought... The shape I'm doing demands, because it's regular, I need it to be basically a square. The actual number has to be a square number. So I'm doing a 9x9 rather than a 10x10. So I have 81 Rubik's Cubes in the bag with me. Well, I have a second one as well, because in case I finish too early, I brought a 5x5x5 one, which is harder to do. So I'll probably just sit there doing that if I... Mm-hmm. But the demands of the actual thing I'm doing means you only have to solve 64 of them, because lots of them can just be set down into the pattern as is. So, no.
Gosh. And have you got memories of doing Rubik's Cubes as a child? Is it something that you...
Well, yeah, I remember doing it as a child and not being able to do it. I remember pulling them apart as a child, and just, I think that's what everybody does, because I think every house had a Rubik's Cube somewhere in the house when you were young. So it's only something that I learned to actually solve in the last year or so, but then I got quite big into it for a while. So at this stage, this is crazy. There's people who can solve Rubik's Cubes in 7 or 8 seconds, and there's world championships in these things. My best is about a minute, but it's... I remember hearing that Will Smith could do a Rubik's Cube in a minute, so when I heard that, I had to make sure I could get down to a minute.
Brilliant. Great, and you're a mathematician.
Yeah. So.
Is there a particular field within maths that you're expert in?
Yes. I'm an expert in something called Ramsey theory, which is, roughly speaking, it's trying to find order in chaos. So if you take any kind of chaotic random set, then you'll necessarily end up with some really nice substructures which are nicely ordered. It's hard to come up with an example. The very simplest example is that if you have 6 people in a room, then there's guaranteed to be either a set of 3 of them who all know one another, or a set of 3 of them who all don't know one another. And it's theorems of that variety that you're looking for. So you just want to find some smaller subset that's nice and ordered. The equivalent to that is if you imagine 6 people all holding ribbons between them. So some of them are holding red ribbons between them, and some of them are holding blue ribbons. So there's 15 ribbons in all between them. Then somewhere there will be a triangle of people that are holding a monochromatic triangle. So there'll either be a red triangle of people somewhere or a blue triangle. And most of what I do is generalizations on that particular idea. Like, very, very much my specific part of maths and what I focused on when I was doing my PhD was exactly that kind of thing. It turns out to be surprisingly hard to determine the behavior of these things.
Wow. What was your PhD? What was the title of your PhD?
The title of the thing was Upper Bounds for Ramsey Numbers, which so basically the Ramsey number is trying to find... So the question, if you invert that question, so instead of saying you have six people, prove there are three. The question is, how many people do you actually need to guarantee that there's either three holding red ribbons or three holding blue ribbons? And you call that number the Ramsey number of three. So the minimum number you need to guarantee either red or blue. And that's six in this case, because there are ways that people can hold five, which avoid it. So if five people hold things in a kind of a star, hold red ribbons in a star and everything else blue, like blues around the side basically, then that doesn't have any of these triangles. So if you're looking for bigger things, like if you want to find, you talk about four, say you want to find four, you want to find a group such that no matter what way they hold their ribbons, you'll find four people who are holding all red ribbons between them or four people who are holding all blue ribbons between them. How many people do you need? And the answer to that is 18. And that's not that hard to prove. And weirdly, it's not actually known for five. It's not actually known what the number is. It's known to be less than 49. And it sounds trivial that you should be able to determine this, but the number of things, the number of ways to hold ribbons that you have to check when you get up to that is 10 to the power of 100 or something like that. It's huge. So a guy once said that, a famous mathematician called Erdős once said that if aliens were to invade the planet and ask us what this thing was, this Ramsey number of five was, then maybe if we got all the best minds in the world together and all the fastest computers, and they gave us a year, then maybe we'd be able to solve it. But if they asked us for the equivalent thing for six, we'd be better off trying to attack them, because there's no way on earth we'd get it. So I don't know if that's comprehensible in any way, but that's the kind of thing I do.
No, it sounds really fascinating. So you're a research fellow at Cambridge.
Yeah, I am.
How do you find that? That's a very kind of privileged position. Not privileged, like it's a very prestigious kind of role to have. What's your experience of being in that environment at Cambridge?
It's very nice. So it is. It's sometimes you scratch your head and you think, what am I doing here? I kind of. It seems strange to have come from a small town in Ireland where you kind of think that the whole world is just centered around this small town. You go to school in the town, you don't think of anything. Then suddenly you go to a secondary school somewhere else and your horizons expand another little amount. And you never expect that you end up being a fellow in a Cambridge university or in Cambridge. It's just... it's still strange to me sometimes, even though I've been in Cambridge for 6 years now, and I've been a fellow in the college for about 2 years now, and I still feel strange about it sometimes. I really like it. I do love the college, and I kind of it's a very nice environment, very nurturing, and they do have great facilities. But yeah, no, every now and then, especially when I go home, I still scratch my head when I go back and go, what am I doing here? I should be, if this was 50 years ago, I'd probably be a farmer or a priest, because, you know, the intelligent kids ended up priests probably.
Do you spend most of your time in Ireland? What's the time ratio with being in Cambridge and being in Ireland? Where do you live mostly?
I spend most of my year in Cambridge. Cambridge has these 8-week terms. I spend most of my terms in Cambridge. I do be over and back to Ireland because I have a girlfriend in Dublin. And then often, it depends. When I was a PhD student, I used to spend a month at home at Christmas, a month at Easter, and a month or two in the summer. Partially because just being at home, and partly I used to teach courses for children in Dublin when I was in younger, for talented children. Nowadays, I tend to be over and back a bit. I haven't been at home as much this year as I have been in the past. And part of that is that the number of conferences and things that I'm invited to has increased massively. So I do be traveling around here, there, and everywhere. So it's hard to be at home as much as I used to be.
Mm.
I'm probably, if anything, I'm home more regularly. Like I go about over and back more regularly, but overall, I'm probably there for less time. So, yeah.
And what do your parents do?
So my father was a policeman, but he's retired now. So he just he spends his time doing carpentry now and doing DIY around the house and this kind of thing. But he's a very, very gifted carpenter.
What has he made? Does he make things for the
house? Every installation in the house, pretty much every press in the house, press is an Irish term, every cupboard and wardrobe and so forth in the house was made by him, everything. And he's been refitting them all since he retired. But he was basically, his father was a boat builder and a farmer. But so my father was essentially apprenticed from the age of 5 and is a fully fledged boat builder. Very rarely builds a boat, but can build full wooden boats from scratch. It's an amazing thing to watch. My mother is a housewife, but I have 3 other siblings. So having 4 of us in the house was more than any job, you know? It was... it's... And, you know, I like to think she did a very good job. But,
And you've got 3 siblings, did you say?
I have 3 siblings, yeah. I have 2 brothers and a sister. So my eldest brother is, was a trader in Dublin, but got laid off with this whole business and has moved to... He's gotten another job, so now he's working as a statistical consultant. My sister, similar thing, couldn't get a job, is a qualified pharmacist and was just finished her degree and couldn't really get a job in Dublin because there was various things going on with the government has messed with pharmacists a good bit recently.
Do you know much about that?
I know, so the specifics of the thing are that they're not... people who are holding basically national health cards, they're not giving as much money to the pharmacists as they should be. If anything, the pharmacists are making a loss from the money that they're spending on these national, or that the people are coming in with health cards are doling out. So they're probably losing money on giving drugs to these people. So I think... Yeah, a lot of people have cut down on they're working on minimal staff, and they're a lot of people have been complaining about it. So my sister, as a result, was leafing through the Journal of the Irish Pharmaceutical Society one day and saw that there were advertising jobs in Bermuda, and thought, well, sure, I'll give that a go. So she's actually moved over to Bermuda and she's living there right now and being a pharmacist in a community pharmacy there.
Mm-hmm.
And my youngest brother is still in university. He's doing engineering in Trinity in Dublin. So yeah.
Fantastic. Very kind of really interesting subjects and very kind of quite similar in a way, quite mathematical and
Yeah, no, very, very scientific. It's something on my mother's side of the family, there's my family and there's 2 other cousins, and all the guys have basically done some variation on maths, engineering or physics or maths, and the 2 girls have both done biology based subjects.
Mm-hmm.
It just seems to be in the blood somehow. It's funny that not a single one of us did any art subject.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You play to your strengths. Have you published or?
Yeah, no, I've published quite a lot of papers. So I published or submitted about 12 papers. So it can take a while in maths. So often you submit a paper and it takes a while for a reviewer to look through it, and by the time it's actually published, it might be 2-3 years sometimes.
Mm.
So at this stage, a lot of the papers they finished or submitted it during my PhD are being published. So of the ones I've submitted, maybe half of them are published.
Yeah. What are your ambitions?
Ambitions, God. I just want to be very good at what I do. And I think that's the most anyone can hope for. I do maths, I enjoy doing it, and I'd like to be very good at it, and I'd like to... I mean, there's always the egotistical thing of wanting to gain recognition for being good at what you do. As long as I can continue doing it, I think I'll be quite happy.
What does standing on the fourth plinth mean to you?
I think it's fun. I think it's really good fun. I think it's a very nice thing. My friend, the friend who's come with me there, James, was saying that he thinks it would be a great idea if it was there all the time. It'd probably tire ye out, but he was saying, yeah, I think he thinks that people would love to come along and love to go up there. Like just people, tourists coming in would love to have a chance to go up there and do whatever they wanted.
Yeah.
I think it's just a really cool idea, and I really liked what I've seen Anthony Gormley do before. The Event Horizon thing I thought was really cool. Quite disturbing. I remember seeing it first and going, somebody about to jump. Wait, somebody over there going to jump as well. And very, very striking.
Yeah. Your friend James, you said he's come with you. How do you know him?
We've been friends. So he's actually, he was born in England, Irish father, English mother, and then moved to Ireland when he was 12, and we've been friends ever since. So we sat beside each other at school and just... and then he's moved back over here to London in recent years. So, just childhood friends.
Yeah, lovely. How do you find being Irish? Could you say a bit about being Irish and living in England?
Being Irish in England?
Yeah.
In many ways, it's not that different, I think, a lot of the time. I think when I came here at first, I made an effort not to just hang out with Irish people. I think Irish people have a habit of going abroad and just hanging out with Irish people. And I don't know how it happened, but over the years, I've noticed that my circle of friends has at the same time often gone down to Irish people. It's just this commonality of having, like, you have the same cultural references, the things you refer to are like things you know as a child. And I do have a lot of friends in Cambridge. There's such a varied, especially amongst postgrads, there's such variation that I have an awful lot of friends who are lots of different nationalities. I have loads of Italian friends for some reason as well, but Germans, Polish, Americans, English, it's friends from all over, really.
And what do your friends and peers and family think about you doing this?
It made my mother laugh. She just thought it was funny. And some of them think it's great. I had a lot of people going, I'd love to come, if only it wasn't 3 o'clock in the morning. lots of people have to work tomorrow, unfortunately.
What's the main thing, just to close, the main thing that you would say about yourself?
Self?
Yeah, about you as a person. About who you think... who you are, in a way, your personality or your kind of passions.
God, I don't know.
Or what you care about the most, I suppose.
People. I love what I do. I love maths, but I think when it comes down to it, people are much more important than that. Like, when it comes down to it, your friends and your family are the people who make up your life. And any amount of... It's lovely thinking about maths and solving a problem. It's a great feeling doing that. It's a great feeling for anyone when they solve something. That kind of eureka moment. But when it comes down to it, if you don't have somebody to turn to, and somebody to go, that's great. They give you a hug at the end of the day, then you don't really have very much at all. So, yeah.
Okay. Great. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.